Welcome to this week's episode of Babelfish, the podcast where non-believers share their life stories. In this week's episode, I talk to two non-believers. First, I talk to Chris. We talk about him growing up as a Roman Catholic. We talk about racism, criticizing apartheid, and religion and politics. Then I talk to Judy. We talk about her growing up as an atheist. We talk about religious sexism in running, the Rationalist House, and helping atheist refugees. I would like to thank my Patreons, Happy and Lene Peterson. Thank you so much for your support. Please give Babelfish a good rating in your podcast app. Please share Babelfish with your family and friends. In order to continue the podcast, I need funding. Remember, you can support Babelfish by becoming a Patreon. Become a Patreon on patreon.com or the Danish equivalent, tenet.dk. You will find the links in the episode description. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Babelfish. I'm in Auckland, New Zealand, talking to Chris. Welcome.
Thank you.
And can you give a presentation of yourself to our listeners?
Okay, so I'm a 65-year-old plus old white male, formerly from Republic of South Africa.
Yeah.
Born and raised in a Roman Catholic family, very devout family, prayed at night, went to church every week, and was a firm believer in what I was told as a child, until some anomalies occurred in what they were telling me.
Yeah.
And as a young child, I was an altar boy.
So when did you move from South Africa to New Zealand?
Much more recently. Yeah.
When I was 40 years old. So you lived in South Africa for a long time.
For 40 years.
Yeah.
And so the trajectory of a very religious family, Roman Catholic, who prayed at night. Our mother was Irish and deeply religious. My father was modestly religious. And no question ever of criticism of the church in any manner or form.
Okay.
We used to pray, and part of the prayer was that my oldest brother would become a priest and that I and my second brother would become brothers. And we were educated at a Roman Catholic school.
Wow.
All the way through. I had 12 years of Roman Catholicism. But from the age of about 6 or 7, I started to develop a criticism. And it sounds so trivial, but it is what we would call today the question of evil.
Yeah.
But it was at a child's level. And I was very attached to my pet dog. And I'd said to the priest, will Bugs be in heaven with me? Bugs is the dog.
Yeah.
And he said, no, animals don't go to heaven. And that profoundly affected me. Yeah. I thought, there's something wrong here. How is it that
a good dog,
really my top animal in the world, you know, mother and father up there, brothers and sisters, but my dog was very important.
Yeah.
And it created a niggling thing about there's something wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess with time, I could have just got past it, but it always niggled, and it became a question, and I started to see cracks in what I was being told, particularly in the light of the political situation in South Africa where the blacks were being discriminated against. Mm. My family was liberal.
Yeah.
We came from a relatively liberal town where the criticism of the government was up on posters.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the wider world probably isn't aware of it, but there was a very strong movement against the government, even amongst the whites.
Oh, yeah.
Very strong movement.
Yeah.
And it had a free press all the way to the bitter end when apartheid was turfed out. But it struck me as odd that the church wasn't speaking out about the inequities in the society.
Yeah.
And I questioned it in my third year in the 10-year period with the brothers, Morris brothers. And I got some very patronizing answers where, don't worry about that. It's beneath your, you're too young.
You're too young.
And then I have to give full credit to the Morris brothers. When we reached the age of about 12, 13 years old, standard 6, what would that be, 5 years before? Well, about 10, 11, 12 years old. Mm. They put us into classes where they suddenly started engaging with social issues.
Okay.
And they started engaging against the government. Very subtle. So they kept it quiet. And then they'd ask us that we would have what were called catechism classes. That's where we were supposed to be learning about religion.
Yeah.
But there was a particularly good brother, a fellow called Brother John, who kept questioning about our relationship with the social order. He'd say, do you think it's a good thing that, and defining certain moral issues, asking us to make start thinking morally about it. And invariably it crept around to religious things. And we had very lively debates. And I have to give him his due. He didn't dictate any right answers. He made us engage. And it was really eye-opening.
So there was room for debate and discussion.
There was.
Yeah.
And invariably, it crept into the issues of religion.
Mm.
And guys like me and a couple of others who had concerns.
Mm.
I'd have to say, I identify now that by the age of 11, I was a nascent atheist by then.
Mm.
Although, because of the level of mind fixing that you receive when you're a child, it's hard to turn around the belief system that you've been ingrained with. It requires a culpable excision of the thought patterns that you've been impregnated with, and you have to replace them with logical conclusions.
Yeah, something else,
And over time, we had very interesting debates about the morality of the South African political system, but also very engaging debates in the class about religion per se. Oh. Do you know that at that point, about 12, 13 years old, I'd never heard the term atheist.
No.
And somebody one day said something about atheist. And I said, what does that mean? The people who don't believe in God. And I thought, there are people like me. There's almost
actually a definition. Wow. Yeah.
You know, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
I could tell from the tone of the conversations in the class that there were more than one. And I got very close to a guy by my standard seven, so what's that, about 4 years, so about 12 years old.
Mm.
We're close to a guy called Eldred, and he and I used to talk in this playground about these issues, and I thought, it's all bullshit.
Mm.
It's all bullshit. Now, the curious thing is that in the absence of that, of clawing onto religion, you seek other things.
Mm.
And Eldred and I got into a series of books by a guy called von Daniken, a German, who wrote about the chariot of the gods, about how the aliens have been here, and here's all the evidence. And you know the NASCAR lines you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, NASCAR lines.
Exactly that. And it was compelling stuff.
Mm.
And then I started saying, oh, hold on, I've been led down the garden path once. Let me be a little more critical.
Yeah.
And I went through a phase for about a year where I read everything I could on the subject. And I was quite convinced there was a compelling argument that aliens had been here. And then I started getting a little critical of it, and I started researching outside of the von Daniken acolytes and reading that, hey, come on, guys, he's pulling your plonker. And realized that, again, you know, I'd been... the manipulation of a cunning presentation can be quite compelling.
Yes.
In defense of von Daniken, many years later, he went on German TV and said, guys, you stupid, stupid people. And he was the one guy who was honest enough and said, I was spinning you a yarn.
Yeah,
you wanted to hear it? I spun you a yarn. I made a lot of money. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So von Daniken has a lot of credit, despite the fact he produced a whole lot of shit, which is still read today as if it's genuine.
Yeah.
But the point there really was about how easily we are misled. And so I'd evolved away from religion at that point.
Mm.
But being non-religious in South Africa is actually very difficult. It's a deeply religious country, particularly amongst the Afrikaners, and there's sort of amongst the whites, there's almost two tribes, English and Afrikaners. Yeah. And there's a lot of cross thing, but and generally they've got on very well. But there was certainly a division along the lines of religion. The Afrikaners were much more devout.
Yeah, I've been in South Africa and interviewed people a year ago. Yeah.
And as you progressed, as you got out of high school, briefly, in high school, I basically confronted the brothers and said, I don't believe this bullshit.
Mm.
And very interesting, they were very tolerant of it.
Okay.
Very tolerant. They didn't try and ostracize me. You know, in hindsight, for all I dislike religious organizations per se, the Morris brothers were an enlightened bunch.
Mm.
And despite all you've heard about priests and brothers buggering small kids, I only ever once saw one evidence of it. Mm. And certainly it wasn't a prevalent issue that I was aware of at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, minor defense of the Catholic Church in that instance. All of the Catholics that I met were moral people, good people.
Mm.
The brothers and nuns were good people. So I can't fault them. But the fact that they believed in something that to me was clearly false represented a loss in faith for any authority figures.
Yeah.
They purported to be authority figures, and they did let down the side when it came to actually pushing the government of the day.
Mm.
But there's really many more complex reasons for
that
I couldn't cover here.
Yeah.
But the ongoing thing was that in the trajectory, when I went, you know, so in South Africa you had to do compulsory military service. When we went in, they said, what's your religion? I said, I'm an atheist. They said, you can't be. I said, what do you mean I can't be? No, you've got to choose from these lists.
It's not in the list. Boxes.
Yeah. So my dog tags to this day have RC. They said, what church did you attend? I said, Roman Catholic. I was now back being a Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
Curiously, you couldn't leave. You had, on Saturday or Sunday, you had a choice. On the weekend, you could be Jewish on Saturday, but you had to be one of a religion. And if you were Christian, you got Sunday morning off. And if you're Jewish, you got Saturday morning off. And it was a curious thing. I was Jewish on Saturday and Christian on Sunday. it was the other way around because, you know, I managed to avoid the things. So, but also it extended into the social life.
Yeah.
That if you raised your hand and questioned anything religious, you were treated like a leper.
Okay.
And I learned, and I don't know how public this goes, I learned that if you ever wanted to get laid, you never told a lady that you were an atheist. And a lot of those Christian ladies were very obliging.
Yeah.
Provided you didn't mention that you were an atheist. Didn't want to point out the fact that, you know, what we were up to was probably you had them going to hell and me going happily smiling on my way.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, they were curious. It always struck me as odd. As an atheist, and I'm not trying to virtue signal or anything, but I was a good little boy. You know, I didn't misbehave. I didn't beat anybody up. But, you know, I was generally a nerd.
Yeah.
But the reality was that as an observer of people who claimed to be devout, good, moral Christians, I watched the behavior of some of my schoolmates who were all big, strong church-going, and the behavior, the hypocrisy, theft from stores, cheating at school, cheating in anything. It was just the norm that people would, if I could get away, I'll get away from it. And it always troubled me immensely. I thought, what the hell is wrong with these people? They claim that there's somebody looking at them over their shoulder, but they behave like this. And that has been true all the way through my life, is watching the behavior of religious people. And that's the living definition of hypocrisy. At least as an atheist, I could say, hey, look, there's no consequence, rebob, rebob.
Yeah.
But I found that by and large, people could be divided into categories of those who behave by civilized norms and a very large group who don't, who will take all the shortcuts, the Trumps of the world. And so, I mean, I've ended up very late. I tended to forget about religion as I got into my 20s and 30s. It became background noise.
Yeah.
I'm not religious. I'm not going to listen to that bullshit. And if anybody asked me, I tell them I'm an atheist, which always drew interesting reactions. Because even in my 30s, people say,
what? Yeah.
Can't trust you. Really? Really? Honestly, is your God all that keeps you from behaving? And guess what? Because a whole cohort of your fellows don't. And I forgot about it largely. Wouldn't get married in the churches, let both my wives know. I've made mistakes serially. And so, that's not true. I'm sorry. Didn't want to get married in churches. But it wasn't important to me to the extent that they wanted to get married in churches. So I said, well, what the hell? Yeah. It's meaningless to me. And then people come and say, you're a hypocrite. I say, no, it's meaningless to me. It means nothing, zero. Yeah. But so it means something to my wife.
Yeah.
My wife, and then the second time around, my wife. Mm. It's important to them. Mm. And it's important to their families. So my lack of interest in the subject doesn't trump their interest in the subject. Mm. So I got married in churches twice.
Yeah.
But I made it very clear in both instances to the preachers. Mm. In fact, one time, the first time around, we battled to get a preacher. I left it to my wife. I said, you want to get married in church? You find a preacher that will marry us in church, knowing that I'm going to say to the guy, I'm an atheist.
Yeah.
And curiously, they did.
Yeah.
In both instances, we did. So, again, the churches themselves are pragmatic about these things. And I don't see that as hypocrisy. Not in the sense that the priests and vicars are pragmatic enough to know that at least they're keeping one of their flock in the fold, even if she's now marrying a heretic.
Yeah.
And it isn't that important. I'm made it clear to these guys, to me, religion is unimportant.
Mm.
9/11 changed that.
Okay.
9/11 changed that, and curiously for our membership here at the Rationalists, a number of people have had a similar epiphany, so to speak.
Okay.
When I realized that the evils of religion can bring a very serious impact, not just to the individuals, but to the world.
Mm.
And I mean, that's plainly evident. But the reality is, you can sail through life and ignore that fact until your nose gets rubbed in it when two bloody great towers kill 3,000 people at the hands of fanatics. So at that point, I tended to get back into the fray and argue with people. With the advent of the internet, you get a platform where you can engage with people a bit more, but that's also not a pleasant way of doing things. For a while, I spent a lot of time on YouTube engaging particularly with Muslims about religion in general, but the perceived problems with their particular religion because it advocates for violence under certain circumstances. Quite explicitly, you've read the Quran, and it's got a lot of references to the others, the people who are not like us.
Yeah.
So the Quran is uniquely different to the Bible, which I read when I was in Standard 9. Tedious. And the nail in the coffin for any religious intent. Mm. So go back a step. When you're losing your religion, you go through phases.
Yeah.
You know, am I right? Am I wrong? Mm. You go through doubt, and eventually you harden up. But even as late as my second to last year in high school, they took us away on a retreat. Retreat is a Catholic term for, we're going to mind fuck you. Pardon the expression.
Yeah,
we're going to now make you really think that you need to be involved with God.
Yeah.
And they did a very good job. I have to say, I came away from it thinking, oh, I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I went through the process of the whole critical process explicitly in my mind and said, no, I'm right. They're wrong.
Mm.
But they really made you feel spiritual.
Yeah.
And the mind manipulation techniques are incredibly cunning. And in hindsight, I recognize those same techniques that they were using on that retreat as what is now called cult, what's called whether you're inculcating ideas into stupid people.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, definitely techniques. So I basically have ended up in the Rationalists here following 9/11.
Okay.
And found a group of people who think alike. Now, there's always a danger in that, because if you start speaking to people who are very much like you, you may be ending up with a relatively insular or tunnel vision.
Mm.
So it's always good to engage with the others, and I make a policy of trying to talk to other people about their religious views and try to be uncritical. However, don't succeed.
It's difficult.
Very difficult.
Yeah, okay.
When I hear blind stupidity and blind hypocrisy. And the curious thing is, gross ignorance about their own religions.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk to people about their religions, I find that certainly the people of the Rationalists are way, way more educated.
Mm.
We've got a young guy here who was a born-again preacher.
Mm.
And when he worked out that it probably wasn't true, like so many people, like the guy who presents that atheist TV radio show in the United States, his name I can't remember right now.
Mm.
well-versed in the Bible and therefore can turn it round on the previous audience and actually use their in-depth knowledge of the Bible to say, look, guys, you're really misunderstanding this.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to meet a group of people where the range of knowledge about religion is actually far better and more widely researched than the religious themselves, by and large.
Yeah.
We know William Lane Craig type arguers, but we're sitting in a library right now, which is probably the best collection of secular and religious. There's a huge number of religious tracts here for you to read, so that anybody who's interested in the subject can actually come and get a comprehensive range view of all of the religions. Yeah. Right here.
Yeah, I like this. Collection. I really like the library. It's really good. Yeah.
So that's, essentially, I hate to say it, as far as I'm concerned, religion is a natural condition. So just an aside, you're probably disinterested in this, but I think that religion is a natural consequence, an artifact of emergent intelligence. Mm. So that as any animal, if ever any animal reaches a point where it's actually going to think about abstract questions about where did the slot come from, and before they found out where the slots come from, there's going to be a period where the intelligent animals are going to be having to adopt some form of spiritual explanation because there's no obvious other one.
Yeah.
And a spiritual explanation very rapidly devolves into religion. So I think that religion and intelligence are closely linked.
Mm.
How they're how they're perpetuated in time, hopefully as humans we'll get rid of it. But because it's an innate condition of intelligence, it's probably going to be around like
a long
body
time.
Lice.
Yeah.
A long, long time.
Yeah. And it instigated rules of how we can live in communities at a point where we didn't have...
I don't think that that's necessarily true. In that we would have always, as social animals, we already had pecking orders and rules of some sort. It did tend to, in my opinion, it tended to categorize or change the importance of certain aspects. It is normal, and you would expect that in any social animal grouping where tribes form groups, there would have been rules and regulations regarding relationships.
Yeah.
And that's true of the people of South America in the jungles. They have these things, their anthropologists tell us, they have nascent social structures that resemble a sort of a legal, not written law, but customs and practical aspects that make living as a tribe practical.
Yeah.
It's when religions come along and then claim they have some overarching judgment on what is acceptable and what's not, that the well gets poisoned. Because I think otherwise people would be relatively pragmatic. Don't know that for sure. I have to say my faith in humanity has taken a sharp downward duck.
Yeah.
More recently, it scares the hell out of me to see how evangelicals who were dismissed even as recently as Ronald Reagan, who laughed at them, have managed to hijack the right wing of the American political spectrum to the extent that they're changing the world reality.
Yeah.
They have managed to get a complete buffoon into power who is the most dangerous creature around and the only major core group that's keeping him in power. 33% of Americans are evangelical.
Yeah.
31% of them, 31% that 31% of that 33%, which is virtually 97%, support Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Does that talk to you something about the herd mentality of religions and how easily corralled humans are? That's the thing that scares me.
Yeah.
And that scares me is that so many people can be made to do things, can be convinced to do things that that would be abhorrent in any moral judgment. And I've heard the arguments on their side of the thing about, killing babies and, Yeah, okay. But And the right wing is saying that we're the immoral bastards. Mm. But we're looking at their judgment. I'm looking at their judgment and saying, you guys are a pack, a herd of animals.
Mm.
That somebody's led by the nose and is taking you down a very dark path.
Mm.
And you think you're the moral...
You have the moral high ground. Yeah.
It shocks me. Mm. Religion is a force to be reckoned with. And it's a scary force because in the wrong hands, it could be devastatingly... it could have a real devastating effect on the trajectory of humanity.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of a huge dominant theocracies, it's not out of the question.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, Handmaid's Tale.
I haven't read Handmaid's Tale. I know nothing about it.
Oh, yeah.
No,
that's the scary future picture of how wrong it can go.
Well, you've only got to look at Iran under the mullahs and Ireland under the damned priests.
Yeah.
Now, the wonderful thing about Ireland is when those priests were exposed for their feet of clay, the Irish have fled in droves. My family, my extended family on my mother's side in Ireland, used to be very, I presume probably still deeply religious, but they fled the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them have had their faith rocked. And it's the ones who've had their faith rocked that are going to say, you know what, maybe this religion is shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Talking to you.
This was my talk with Chris. Coming up is my talk with Judy.
Hi, how are you? So I'm Judy DeLewa, and I'm the office manager at the New Zealand Association of Rationalists and Humanists.
Yeah, and we're at the Rationalist House right now in your library.
Yeah, great building.
Yeah.
We always try to keep it maintained and everything. It's obviously at a bit of a cost because we don't have the tax relief like the churches have.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. So I've been an atheist all my life.
Yeah.
Because my parents were atheists. And so I was just born as an atheist. So I have never had a belief in anything.
Mm.
So I don't really know what it's like to be these people when they say they believe in something. But anyway.
Have you ever doubted being an atheist?
No.
No?
Never.
Okay.
Never. Because never had it put into me about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, you always, when you're young, you're sort of thinking, okay, I'm going to die at some stage, and you know, you think, oh, that's not such a great thing. But it, you know, I know that there's no God that's going to help me. It's just part of life.
Yeah.
Death is part of life.
Yeah.
So, and then over time, you get to understand. Well, let's enjoy it. Let's make the most of life. While we're on the planet, and but initially, like. My mum came from a slightly religious background on her mother's side, or her dad was from Finland, and he came to New Zealand, and he wasn't really that religious. And then my mum started reading. She was a real avid reader and read herself into all the books about non-religion, and was this is not right. So from quite an early age, I think something like about 16, she wasn't religious, and then she met my dad. Who was from Holland, but he has a Semitic background. So he was not a Jew. He's never called himself a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
But he was put in the concentration camps because he had a Semitic background. That's what he called himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he always says, I've never been a Jew, you know.
But just if you're a quarter or eighth something Jews in your family, you were...
No, and he said, you know, it's just a religion. And whilst he looked, you know, he had the dark skin, the dark curly hair, you know. He was Semitic, you know. So he was an atheist. So when they had myself and my sister, we were brought up as atheists, you know.
Yeah.
Just didn't believe. And we were also taught that we were very equal as females, you know. We were equal to men.
Yeah.
And we were told, I always spent my life from really young, I was a tomboy, and then just being told, if you want to do something a boy does, you do it. If you want to do something a girl does, you do it. You do what you do, you know, that you enjoy, you know. So I... Very young, I was a good runner. I remember.
Was it unusual for the girls in your?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand was reasonably liberal, but you know, we're talking the sort of mid-70s, early 70s, when I was sort of young and late 60s, and it was still kind of closed-minded, but yeah. I was quite outspoken from a very young age and didn't have a problem with it. So I just, and just did things that, if it was what a male did, too bad, you know. It's only religion that's controlling that side of it. So.
Yeah.
And then I got into motor vehicles and I did motor racing and and worked in the motor industry and never, you know, and always knew because religion kind of controls that sort of thing. So I just did
and stuff. It was never an issue due to your background.
Well, not really. Sometimes, you know, you come across someone who doesn't like it or you get, you hear comments.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I was running and I was a really good runner in my early teens and you couldn't run middle distance at a younger age. You could only run up to 400 metres and 800 metres. You couldn't do above that.
Okay.
So I wanted to do 1500 metres and I said, could I go in the boys' race? And they were like, okay, so let me, you know. But I won. I actually won by 100 metres. And there was a picture in the paper where I was breasting the tape and then the guy who's second, he's coming round the bend. And then all the letters to the editor, like some were like, yeah, that's really good. And others were like, oh, she's not going to get her periods and not going to have children. And, and there were some religious overtones in it. And it was just, you know, you just thought, oh. But, you know, of course.
But that was about the same time the first woman ran a marathon, the famous Boston marathon, where someone tried to pull her away.
I mean, you know, it isn't that long ago.
Yeah.
But people, even then, religion was trying to dominate people.
Yeah.
But New Zealand has obviously come a long way now.
Mm-hmm.
So women do all sorts of sports, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you still get like fundamentalist type religious people that would, you know, they wouldn't want their females doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just, it just shows you how religion has held females back, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just so bad.
Yeah. So how did you get involved in the rationalist humanist movement?
Okay. Oh, because my parents were members here in the late 60s. So I've been coming here since I was really little, actually, and I've seen Rationalist House change and evolve, like, you know, get done up and things like that. And I've also seen different, you know, you get any organisation where you get sort of volunteers, you get people of different ideas and sometimes they can have clashes. So I've seen things like that go on, but, you know, but it's always been a very good organisation. And my mum actually did the office work for, I think, maybe nearly 20 years while we were young, you know. She would come in and do that. And I never thought I'd actually be doing it myself. But I spent like about 28 years in the motor industry and then decided to have my son late, something like breeder. He's just turned 13 and I'm 58. So. But I needed a job I could do part-time for a little bit because I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, I couldn't really, because I was actually managing a truck dealership and then I was in managing the cars as well and I couldn't really do that full-time. So I thought, oh, well, and then we needed someone here. So I went, okay, I was on council and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I was actually president for about 4 years and then, and on council. And then when we needed someone, I just thought, I'll do that. And I've been here
since
13 years and I've gone, oh, I'm just like my mother.
Second generation.
So I've been involved with this for a long time. Mm. I didn't actually join, you know, you go off and do your own thing. And I didn't join till I was, it was 1999 actually, and I was just before I was about 40, I think I was in my late 30s, and I was taking my parents who were getting elderly, and I was taking them into meetings, you know, and Naira McCarthy, who was president at the time, amazing lady, Maori lady, who's on our, you know, she's our trustee at the moment, one of our trustees, and just this most amazing person who's got so much knowledge of just, if you want an answer, you go to her anyway. She was like, oi, Judy, you, why haven't you joined? And I'm like, and she's, so I joined, you know, and then within sort of minutes, she got me onto council. So I was on the council for a bit. Then I was vice president, and then suddenly I was president for 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm still on council. I'm a secretary. I think I've been 20 years on the council, actually.
Yeah.
It's quite a long time. So, yeah, it's just been a part of my life, I suppose.
Okay, so, and how, since, because you must know, since your parents were involved and now you, how has New Zealand changed in relation to non-belief?
We've gotten more non-believers.
Yeah.
You know, as time has gone on. But not everyone joins an association like this. And one of the things with New Zealand is, whilst religion still is in our government and has an influence and things like that.
I actually was surprised this morning when I turned off the telly. I wanted some news. And there were so many... It was about... Yeah, there were some ceremonies or prayers and singing on most of the channels I could find.
But you see, they've got the money. They've got the money to do, have those ads or, you know, sermons.
Whatever. Yeah, Sunday morning.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Sunday today, so...
But, you know, not a lot of people would be listening to those.
Okay.
Because we've got... I think it's now nearly 1.7 million. It was 1.63 million. I think it's growing, maybe nearly 1.73 million people now that aren't religious.
Yeah.
That, you know, on the census, they've said they're not religious. So, but the thing is, you don't have to listen to those prayers.
Yeah.
So your life is pretty free to be what you want. Mm. So people that are atheists or non-believers, they don't tend to join a group. They'll only join up to a group if something was really pressing, you know, like one of the things that this organisation did, I think it was the early 60s, is playgrounds in New Zealand were locked on Sundays because that was the day of rest. Now, you know, if you did that now, people would be like,
oh, what?
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
But this organisation, to work to basically get them opened.
Yeah.
So we did, we did that. We did, done a lot of submissions to government and a lot of, done a lot of work for people that needed help, like the gay people that, when it was a crime to be gay, so we were always lobbying for that. So we lobbied to get these playgrounds opened.
Mm.
So, it's changed over time.
Yeah.
And, if suddenly churches came in and said playgrounds are shut on a Sunday, well, I think you find the New Zealanders would join this and they'd be ringing us up because we get calls, from people around the New Zealand that there's some pressing issue maybe in their own local community.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we often have to look at that.
And what about the changes towards how New Zealanders thinking about, well, now half of the population are non-believers, but... Maybe 40 years ago, how was non-believers perceived back then?
Like 4 years back? Or
40
beyond?
Years
ago. Oh, 40 years ago.
Yeah,
I think people did, some people that were non-believers perhaps were quiet about it.
Okay,
I know my family wasn't because obviously they were members of this.
Place, and active,
So they were active and they were happy to say that they didn't believe. So I was like that even at school, I was pulled out of religious instruction because initially at one stage we were in it and I questioned the teacher and of course that was enough to get you thrown out. But a lot of people were a bit more quiet about the fact that they weren't religious. And I think as a generation's evolved, when it hasn't been very much... you're not forced to go to churches and things. People do change.
Mm.
And, our education system's been reasonably secular most of the time. So I think, generations have been able to question things,
I could imagine amongst the young ones there are hardly any believers left. The new generations that are coming.
I have seen some statistics which has come through from Australia, but it's meant to be the same here, that a lot of the teenagers going into their early 20s now, there's a lot of them that are non-believers.
Yeah.
And they definitely associate with the fact that they don't believe and they're not religious and it doesn't, they're not going to join anything. So, schools and universities have kept people... being thinkers and critically think about themselves, and they can, you know, I mean, you would, I can't imagine living in a country that is dominated by religion and controls you. And I mean, I would have probably been killed by now, I'm sure, if it was in a Muslim country for being so outspoken. But, you know, you sort of feel really sorry for those people, you know.
Yeah, and we are privileged.
Oh, we are, really.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. And, like, this organisation is helping people that are ex-religious, you know, overseas people, like especially the Muslim communities.
Yeah.
We've helped a few people now who have seeked asylum here. We've helped them get refugee status as atheists and be able to stay in New Zealand.
Yeah, because it's not always taken into consideration or valued.
No, it's a bit tricky being an atheist coming from another country as a refugee. There've been a lot of Christian refugees come in from Muslim countries or non-Christian countries.
Yeah.
Or even just Muslim people that don't want to be in very sort of, in the terrible, terrible issues of Muslim politics and things. But the atheists, it's a bit of a struggle because they can't be open. They have to be very careful what they say in case they have to go back, you know.
Yeah.
If they don't get refugee status. So we're working to try and figure out how we can support these people more and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at other things, this organisation, like, you know, should we become a charity so that we can, because we are doing charity work and help with obviously lowering the costs of running this building.
Yeah.
Because if we're not-for-profit and are a charity, we'd have a lot less costs like rates and things like that. And the other big thing that we're doing is the Secular Education Network, which we started, but we sort of started it a separate thing so that other people, not necessarily atheists, you know, other churches, other religious people could be in it or didn't have to just be a non-believer, to try and get religious indoctrination out of state schools.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a big thing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, no, it's good that you can come and, find out what's going on over this part of the world.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. In order to continue the podcast, I need funding. Remember, you can support Babelfish by becoming a Patreon. You can also follow Babelfish on Facebook and Instagram. You'll find the links in the episode description. Until next time, be a happy human.